Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking about investments and the state of the economy on the show today with our guest, Frank Armstrong, back with us once again, certified financial planner and founder and president of Investor Solutions. He has more than 47 years of experience in the securities and financial services industry. So great to have him back. And he's certainly ready for your questions. What do you want to know about the state of the economy? What investment questions do you have? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Frank Armstrong, good to have you back. Welcome.
Happy New Year. Thanks. It's always great.
Thank you so much. Well, let's start with the state of the economy. How's it looking?
Well, you have a number of people who are severely disadvantaged, the gig workers, the restaurant people, airline people, and then you have a number of people who are basically unaffected. They're working from home, and their economic ability is unchanged. So it's a dual system, but basically unemployment is really, really high. A lot of people are suffering greatly, and it's not going to improve until the virus lets us improve.
Yeah. You hear the term sector rotation.
Yeah, we know that various parts of the economy behave differently at various parts of the economic cycle. And in an event where there's a lot of uncertainty created, like the pandemic, there's a flight to quality, and people will go towards the largest, safest companies, and that's basically the S&P 500 here in America. And they'll be dumping what they perceive to be the higher risk items. So the S&P gets fully priced or overpriced, and the small and value and profit companies, emerging markets, get underpriced. But when things begin to straighten out and people can look forward with some degree of confidence, you see those sectors reverse. And in other words, every sector has its day in the sun, but they're different days. And so the last quarter has seen a massive reversal of fortune for small value foreign companies, all of which did better than the S&P 500, but they had lagged for quite some time. So we're now catching up on those let's call them tilts towards small and value and foreign.
So and that's the way we're headed, you think?
Well, as long as people have confidence in a recovery, I think they'll have develop a taste for risk beyond the S&P 500, and they'll start to see really compelling values in other sectors of the economy. The prices are just wonderful in those sectors compared to the S&P 500, where many stocks are, let's say, fully priced.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Frank Armstrong, insanely overpriced.
Frank Armstrong, our guest. Some questions. Give a call, 800-642-1234. Let's take a call from Gary in Madison. Gary, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you knew what the requirements were for the stimulus check.
Sure. You can have a family of two people who make up to $150,000 a year getting the stimulus check, and that would be $600 per person plus for their children, $600 per person. That's the stimulus check. And then the other measure that's out there is the $300 bump in unemployment. So if you're unemployed, you get the $300 bump. But everybody below that $150,000 threshold gets the $600 check.
All right. Gary, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. So I'm wondering about this CARES, this latest round. Is the package, do you think it's coming too late? Better late than never, I suppose. But
I would like to have seen it earlier. You know, this is an economy that's 70% consumer driven. And if you don't keep the consumers fat and healthy, it's going to start to spiral the drain. You've got to keep keep that money circulating around. I think for every dollar that someone spends, it's going to circulate five or six times during that year and boost the economy. So I guess you've got an economy on life support, and you need to keep it there until the virus lets us fully recover.
Julie from Heartland, Wisconsin, wonders about investing in precious metals like silver and gold through an IRA self-directed fund. Would that be a wise investment?
It's not one that I would advocate. The investments in commodities have been disappointing. I think if you look back 2,000 years, a Roman could buy a really nice toga for the equivalent of an ounce of gold. Today, a senator can buy a really nice suit for the equivalent of an ounce of gold. So there hasn't been a lot of growth in value in real terms, whereas the stock market and other equity markets have provided real growth above inflation and long-term wealth accumulation.
Yeah. Let's go back to the CARES Act again for a second. Surprise billing? Something?
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, you know.
What is it? How did it get addressed?
Okay. Well, let's suppose your wife has been nagging you to put a little bit of paint on those second story windows, and you manage to fall off the ladder and you break your leg. So off you go to the emergency room, and you think the emergency room is covered under your health plan as a member. Well, what you don't know is that the emergency room doctor, the radiologist who looks at your X-rays, and the physical therapy people may not be covered. And so they can give you bills way in excess. You'll be out of network, and your bill will be way in excess of what you expect. That's the surprise billing. And that's, in many cases, that's a deliberate policy, because you have private equity firms who've bought up emergency room physicians, for instance, took them out of network deliberately so they could charge more. And that's been in large part corrected by the most recent legislation.
So they can't pull that?
Their ability to pull it is going to be restricted. It's no legislation is perfect. There's always compromise, but it's going to be greatly improved.
Oh, that is good news indeed. Patricia in Madison, what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning, Larry and guests. He was just talking about the current Stimulus Act, and I don't know if you'd have information on this. I have an adult granddaughter who has a full-time job under the dollar amount that they state. And she never got the check in the springtime when everyone else in her family received it.
How old is she? Is she a dependent?
She's 24. No, she's not a dependent. She's 24.
I would think she'd be entitled to it. I'm not sure who I would call to get that rectified, but I believe if she's under the threshold limit, she's entitled to it.
One thing I know, I had a friend who said, gee, I didn't get my stimulus check, you know, the one from back in March. And somebody had asked him, well, did you file your taxes online? And the person had filed them online. And they said, well, then they would have automatically been put into your account. And so it's possible. He looked back and sure enough, money had been put into the account and he just didn't realize it. She might want to look back just to see if there was ever something put directly into her account. And that's assuming she filed online.
Yeah, she filed online and had checked the bank account and nothing was added.
There is a way, I think there was a way at least, to get that resolved. And Frank, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that at all. I saw something in the Washington Post about it.
I'm sure there's a way to protest and get it adjusted, but I couldn't give you a direct. I guess if I was in that case, I'd Google it.
Yeah,
I'm sure it would pop up.
Yeah, it's probably. I'm not sure if it'll go through the IRS or who, but there is a way. There is a method. Albeit, I think kind of onerous as I look through it just to read it. There's a little bit of work involved, but she can apply to get that money for sure, Patricia. John in Richland Center, we'll go to you next. Hi, John.
Hi, I'm glad to have survived 62 winters in Wisconsin.
And good for you.
And I think that being that we finished up 2020, which is a history now, we're entering the 21st century of the 21st year, we can look toward green energy because Wisconsin has excellent regional position with 35 inches of rainwater and growing deciduous trees like white oak to burn at 5,000 BTUs per cord. We can go with green energy plus collecting solar in the future as an investment.
John, thank you for calling. What do you think about
I'm not sure, Frank, when you burn that wood that you're not polluting the atmosphere with more CO2. The great thing about forests is it collects the carbon. It traps it. But once you burn it, it puts it back into the atmosphere. I'm all for green energy, wind farms, solar, and hydroelectric, and even and nuclear. I think we got to move in that direction. We're polluting the planet around ourselves, and we're not going to be able to leave a very nice world for our children and grandchildren if we don't stop reasonably quickly.
What is in terms of investing in green energy, what kind of an investment would that be, Frank?
Well, you could directly invest in those companies, or you could buy funds that do not invest in the dirty energy sectors or have large amounts of reserves, for instance. There's plenty of sustainable, what they call sustainable investment opportunities out there, and you can pick and choose what really meets your own particular value judgments. But I think there's a great deal of interest in it. We're going to have to move in that direction. There may be some areas like Tesla stock, which are kind of frothy. Tesla's going to have to improve some exponential size and profits before it really is worth the present valuation. But people are looking ahead, and they're very optimistic about it. I would say that's a higher risk approach than others that diversify across the energy, the green energy sector. There's a whole universe of those investments, and you can pick and choose which ones meet your needs or value judgments.
Frank Armstrong, our guest today, founder and principal in owner of Investor Solutions, Inc. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today. Jane Rotunda, our producer. Our on-air producer, Natalie Guyette. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Frank Armstrong, our guest on the show today. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at investments for the new year and the state of the economy. Join in 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Janet in Madison next. Janet, hi.
Good morning. I'm just referring back to Patricia, who called just a call or two ago about a granddaughter that had not received her stimulus check. And I don't think you guys mentioned it, but there's two routes she could explore. One is on irs.gov. They have a section called Get My Payment. And in that section, you can confirm whether you were sent or not sent that stimulus check from March. So that would be one way to get started. The other is I heard something about if you didn't get it and you think you qualified for it, there's something you can do on your tax return for your 2020 tax return. And it's called a recovery rebate credit. And that's a way you could get that money if you were eligible but somehow didn't get it. So I just thought I'd offer those two things.
Wow, that's great information.
Great information. Janet, thank you so much. Appreciate that very much. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Market volatility, we're getting a bit of that?
We got a lot of it. We had the worst market in March, April that we've seen in our lifetime, and maybe even worse than the Depression. It was pretty brutal as people adjusted to the idea of a global pandemic. And then they adjusted to the idea that this has an end date and that it's not going to be pretty, but in a two-year period or so, we should be through all of this. And they want to be positioned so that they're there when it happens. But, you know, the market is digesting a piece of news every few seconds, and that'll swing it one way or another. And a major event, like let's say that we certify a new vaccine, well, of course, everybody gets optimistic and they want to buy. And then let's say that vaccine fails the test. Well, everybody gets pessimistic and they want to sell. And that's the nature of the beast. But the good thing about volatility is that that's the mechanism that allows you to get the higher returns long term. So if you can just stomach the volatility, you're going to get better returns. And if you want a totally safe investment, it's a guarantee that you're not even going to beat inflation in the long term. So, you know, you have to balance your need for growth with your need for safety, and you can do that by mixing and matching safe assets with volatile assets and meet your long-term goals.
Bob was wondering about changes in fiduciary responsibility laws. There was talk about changing some of those guidelines, but he wasn't sure if that had ever gone through. Anything that you're familiar with on that?
A weakened version of it went through. I'm disappointed in how weak it is, there's been what they call a harmonization of that. It cuts down on the legal responsibility for real fiduciaries like myself and adds a certain layer of comfort for the broker-dealer community. The gaps are big enough to drive an Airbus through. it's again a matter of compromise. I would have preferred much more stringent regulation, it's a small step forward. The broker dealers are going to have to at least to pretend to be responsible.
With the new administration coming in later this month, I know some people have wondered if taxes would be going up, and if so, which ones? What do you think?
Well, of course, my opinion is worth exactly what you're paying for it, which is zero. But you know, in an environment like this, I don't think you'd see a lot of support for a tax increase this year. Down the road, yeah, I think you would. But keep in mind that America is got one of the lowest total tax burdens of any developed nation in the world. We can certainly afford a few more percent in order to do the things we need to do. And when I say total taxes, I mean your state and local taxes, real estate taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, all of that. We're amongst the very lowest, most preferable tax venues in the globe.
And when we get, how does the economy react to higher taxes? Does it?
There's no predicting. I mean, when I was a child, we used to watch Jack Benny constantly complain about his 91% tax bracket. You may be old enough to remember that, Larry. Probably few of the viewers are. But there's no evidence that higher tax brackets really impede economic investment or the accumulation in the stock markets. If you based your investment philosophy entirely on a prediction of tax, even if your prediction was totally correct, it would be a pretty worthless tool to guide your investment philosophy. There's just no correlation. It's just like who wins the election. There's no correlation. It just doesn't matter. Historically, it hasn't mattered. You can point to examples on both sides.
Jeff in Superior has something for us. Jeff, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Happy New Year to you both. I hope you have a prosperous New Year. Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a couple hot investments, and I tell this to my friends, and I truly believe in this as much as I believe the Packers will make it to the Super Bowl. General Electric is a very good investment, and the price is right. I've already made money on the few stocks I've purchased, but I plan to buy more. And with the oncoming of electric cars, Tesla announced they had a good year last year. Volkswagen is going to mass market an electric car that they're building in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Volkswagen is an excellent investment 2, 3, 4 years down the road. I honestly believe those two companies are the future of our economy in America, or, you know, the electric industry overall is a good investment.
Hmm. Jeff,
well, I can't disagree that the world is moving towards electric cars, and probably, I mean, every time I see a Tesla go by, my heart goes pitter-patter. I don't have one, but, you know, it's one of those things. Do I really need one? I only drive 4,000 miles a year. No, I don't. I prefer a policy which diversifies my investments across a wide range of industries and economies as a safer alternative. My own predictions, as I look back over my career, would have been a disaster. You think you know something like computers, and it turns out that every one of the computer companies I would have picked in 1982 are gone, and the same with the software companies. And so we're going to go green energy and more electric, but we don't really know who the winners are going to be. And General Electric has got a slew of problems, they're a great company. I don't disagree, but I wouldn't start buying a portfolio grossly overweighted in either of those stocks.
Courtney from Menasha called. She's a new graduate student, also a salaried essential worker. Her company offers tuition reinvestment, but then she'd be required to stay with the company for a full year after the schooling. Another option would be to not take the reinvestment and have more flexibility and also use the schooling as a tax credit. Does the guest have any, or do you have any idea or advice on what options might be better? She's paying for school without financial aid.
How much does she hate where she's working?
Yeah.
I mean, if you like where you're working and the obligation to stay there isn't burdensome, that sounds like a pretty good deal to me. If on the other hand, you dread going to work every day, that's an entirely different situation. I can't give you a one-size-fits-all answer for that.
Yeah. But if you like where you're working, maybe it's worth it.
Then a tuition reimbursement plan is a great thing. We give it to our employees. I invest in my employees. And, I think that's a great way to incentivize employees and make them more useful and upgrade your workforce at the same time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tom in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
I got a quick question.
I'm 29 years old, so I got a Roth IRA set up through Vanguard currently. And when I started out, I only had enough money to put in, a couple hundred dollars towards, select ETFs, things like that. But now that I have a better income, I'm sort of wondering what is the minimum amount that I should put into, you know, ETF stocks to receive the most benefit long term? Because right now it seems like, you know, buying one or two stocks of Tesla may not be a good idea or something like that. So I'm guessing I'm trying to figure out what is the minimum investment I should put in towards larger investments. So, for example, I would put in like $1,000 towards ETF as opposed to, you know, $200 or something like that.
I think you should save everything you can. I think a good policy is over your working lifetime to look at saving at least 15% of your income so that you can retire in some kind of security and style down the road. I wouldn't buy individual stocks. I would do the ETF route. You know, with Vanguard, I think you can buy one mutual fund that covers the entire world, basically. And that's a probably pretty optimal position for somebody starting out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Good luck, Tom. Thanks.
And Vanguard is one of the places that actually deserves to have a white hat in the securities industry. I have the highest regard for them. They don't pay me anything. We use some of their products. But you're not going to go far wrong with Vanguard ETFs or mutual funds.
Yeah, there you go, Tom. Thank you. Don in Sheboygan, it's your turn. Hi, Don. Thank you
How
for
you doing?
Calling. Good. Appreciate the call.
I had a question, and you might have answered it already. Your opinion of index funds.
Well, I think anytime you can buy a broadly diversified portfolio covering a full market is a good thing. There are some funds that have made marginal improvements over index funds in that they don't get penalized so much by reconstitution. For instance, you saw the price changes when Tesla joined the S&P 500. In anticipation of that, which everybody knew it was going to happen, prices went up. And as soon as it joined, they went back down. And so the fund owners were penalized by that price movement. On the other hand, funds that have relaxed those restrictions to absolutely mimic the fund every second of every day won't have that reconstitution effect. But a broadly based index across the largest section of the world is the lowest risk, highest probability of success approach you can take.
Well, there you go, Don. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I mean, we mentioned Tesla, or you did a couple of times. What happens when a stock is added or dropped from the S&P? You talked about it goes up and then it goes back down.
Well, you know, the S&P 500 is a huge index, and many, many institutions are tasked with replicating that exactly. So when they announce that Tesla is going to come into the S&P, everybody out there is saying, oh, good, we know they're going to have to buy it on this particular date. Let's buy some, and it drives the prices up. And they do have to buy it at the higher price. And then that pressure's gone away, and so the price comes down a little. But those are significant, those are significant events. They're not de minimis events. So a fund that said, okay, well, we think Tesla's, you know, going to be part of the S&P 500, but we're going to wait 30 days to buy it. Well, they probably won't have that same reconstitution effect penalty.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sharon from Appleton wants to know your thoughts about buying Bitcoin now.
I'm not particularly positive on Bitcoin. It has no particular value. It's not even a commodity. It's just... we all agree on the price of a dollar, and there's a government agency to stabilize it. That's very, very cool. But Bitcoin's got no stabilization mechanism. On the other hand, those types of cryptocurrencies will become more useful as a method of payment and exchange down the road. But as far as buying one to hold it for my retirement account, I would not be interested in that at all. But the software that underlies it and the ability to trade and for people who have no access to banking around the world to be able to trade it is a wonderful thing. It's not like Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies are going away. But the question is, do you want to invest in something that's totally speculative as to what the value might be tomorrow? And you can see the price changes have been, you know, exponential. They've been crazy price changes, and there's no underlying value to it. It doesn't pay a dividend. It doesn't have any commercial use. It's just, you know, determined by whatever.
All right.
Who knows what drives that price?
Al in Viroqua will give you a chance now. Hi, Al.
Hi, Larry. Again, you're the best. You're the best host on radio, the man with a smile in his voice. A question, would you invest in railroads, ATSF, and also your view of Fidelity Blue Chip funds?
Railroads, you know, railroads are one little tiny sector of the transportation sector, which is one little tiny sector of the U.S. market or the global market. And I always believe that if you can broadly diversify across the entire market in an index fund or an ETF, it's the lowest cost, lowest risk way you can get exposure to the market and the surest way to accumulate wealth. Not that railroads might not go up rather much in the short term or down. You know, I'm not making a prediction on the value of the railroads, only that it's a higher risk than a more broadly diversified portfolio.
Yeah. And Fidelity Blue Chip funds?
Fidelity is another great company, and the Blue Chips are more than likely a clone or a very close clone to the S&P 500. And again, that they're not as broadly diversified as I would prefer. I just buy the whole market. I don't try and pick and choose. And I think that's been the you know, it sounds very simplistic. It sounds, you know, but on the other hand, it's always worked. And I'm not adverse to a system that's always worked before. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. Helen in southeastern Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hi. We're not getting anything on interest in our savings accounts and on CDs nowadays. Where would you recommend putting $10,000 if you have extra cash right now?
Well, join the crew. There's the Federal Reserve has deliberately driven interest rates down to zero or very close to it, and that pretty much sets the benchmark for all of the fixed income safe investment type stuff. So, you know, in order to get higher yields, you're going to have to take higher risk. You might want to have a diversified portfolio that was maybe lower quality. It's going to go up and down a little more. It's not going to be just as safe as your CD, but it might have a higher dividend. You could look at some even municipal bonds, some of those are paying more than treasuries, and you have the benefit of not having to pay taxes on them. You could do, on the far end, a small portion in emerging market bonds might not be a bad idea if it was a small percentage of your total fixed income portfolio. But with interest rates at zero, going long duration would be a big bet that they're never going to go up. And so I wouldn't buy a 30-year bond and expect that I was going to do well, because if interest rates go up, the capital value of your bond is going to plummet.
No, yeah, makes sense. Helen, thank you.
We have a lot of clients who have decided that they would rather take higher equity exposure, and which means they're willing to take higher risk. But you know, the traditional 60-40 portfolio, 40% of that's not generating very much, if anything, and that won't help them meet their needs. And that's been a deliberate policy by the Federal Reserve to, in part, to support the stock market prices. And that's probably not going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, probably not. Ellen, thank you. Judy from Fitchburg emailed with some concerns. She references a report called Climate-Related Market Risk, where the first finding states climate change poses a major risk to the stability of the U.S. financial system and to its ability to sustain the American economy. She wants to know which U.S. investment companies are taking this seriously and advising their clients accordingly.
I think the major risk that they may be referring to is banks financing fracking or oil drilling, because if the demand stays low, those companies may not be able to repay their loans. Climate risk is a risk, and diversifying away from that by going to some of the so-called sustainable funds may mediate that risk a little. The energy sector is certainly going to be troubled until we see a rebound in the economy and people start to travel more. So that's been a major risk, and I don't know when that'll be over. I don't think the days of gasoline are gone forever, but probably it's going to decline as people move towards more energy and environmental friendly devices.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, before we, I've got a few more questions for you, but before we close, I do want to mention your website, because I've always found that website to be very useful. Talk about what you've got for people.
Well, you know, we've got my first book, which we think was the first book written on the Internet for the Internet, called Investment Strategies for the 21st Century. That's available in a couple thousand articles I've written over the ages, and I've tried to throw out the ones that are no longer relevant. And you can go in there and search for any kind of topic you like on investment theory. I try to keep away from predictions about what's going to happen tomorrow or next year. But I've also tried to popularize the best financial economics that are available to help people make better investment decisions.
Yeah, Investor Solutions, Inc., right?
No, InvestorSolutions.com.
What was I thinking? InvestorSolutions.com is the place to go. Well, just you've talked a bit about, I think, about investments and long-term. Anything else to note looking ahead to the future market and economy?
Well, I think it's in the short term, let's say the next 5 years, it's going to be entirely dependent upon how quickly we can get vaccines into the arms of people who need them, and then how quickly people can get back about their daily life in the ways that we looked at before. I mean, there are large portions of the economy that are really, really suffering. And the people, and that's just not a that's a very human dimension to that. Those people are suffering, and they can't spend, and that hurts the economy more. So, you know, I think the government's got to do a lot more towards stimulating the economy than they have. That's my own personal value judgment. You know, there is an end in sight to this, and we can expedite it, but through better government supervision of distribution of vaccines and things, testing and tracking and all that. It's going to come. The pandemic will eventually peter out, and we'll be able to rebuild. But the speed at which we master this is going to depend upon the speed at which the economy recovers.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't ever bet against the capitalistic society. That people find ways to adopt. They work from home. They put up plastic dividers between workstations. They find all kinds of ways to adopt and continue to improve and their businesses and provide better services. And I mean, we're not just all rolling over and playing dead because, you know, and I, you know, I don't think you want to bet against those people who are determined to make a go of it.
Frank, that's a great way to close. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Larry, and I want to wish all of your listeners a happy and a prosperous and a healthy new year.
Frank Armstrong, our guest today, founder and principal investor of Solutions, Inc., a fee-only registered investment advisor. And tell you what, he's always fun and informative to have him with us on the show, and we'll get him back and we'll do it again. It's always informative to have Mary Eberle join us as well, and she's going to be up next to talk about DNA gift kits and other popular gifts over the holiday season, and tracing your roots. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.